Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Kieser here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in our friend Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dent. How are you doing this morning?
Awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So the Titans at 0-2. Taking on the Green Bay Packers on Sunday. We all have been heavily anticipating the Malik Willis versus Will Levis show, but then Jordan Love stepped on the practice field yesterday. So what do you make of kind of that dynamic heading into this with Jordan Love back at practice and Malik Willis coming off a victory against the Indianapolis Colts as the Titans prepare to host the Packers this weekend?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, that Love could potentially return this quickly. I just wonder what exactly is the there's two things here. Number one, I'm like, is this an okie doke? Like, are they throwing this out there, leaking this just to, you know, provide an element of confusion heading into this game and potentially force the Titans to, you know, prepare for two quarterbacks when the reality it's going to be Malik Willis. And if it's Malik Willis, it's the easiest preparation possible because you know the guy. If he does come back, though, it's quite a turnaround, and I'm wondering, you know, what the wisdom is there. Is he coming back too fast? I mean, I'm not out there watching him in practice. Obviously, we won't know until we see him on a football field how he's moving and whether or not this was something that maybe was a little forced. But I'll say this. I thought about it with Tua, too. Some of these deals, these extensions get signed, and, you know, I was talking to somebody in the Dolphins organization about Tua, and I was asking, I said, you know, when the concussion happens, do you think he feels a personal sense of, like, responsibility where he's like, I just signed this huge deal. I have a ton of money coming to me. It can't be over because I can't walk away from what, you know, what I just took on financially. And, you know, does that enter his mindset? And, you know, I don't think the Dolphins really feel that, but he's like, look, every person you want to show that you're worthy of getting the paycheck you just signed, especially when it's something that massive. And I wonder that with Jordan Love too. You get injured and it's like every game you miss, you kind of do that math in your head where you're like, okay, well, it's a massive game check that now I'm not out there justifying. And so part of me wonders if that's, you know, plays into a player's mind and you push yourself to get back a little bit. And, you know, Willis, I will say this for Matt LaFleur. I thought he balanced out the game plan really well for Malik Willis. He limited, you know, the opportunities for him to make mistakes. I think they made sure they did as good a job as possible of keeping him from holding the football at times. You know, for what it was in a pinch, I thought Malik did a good job. I don't know how sustainable that is long-term in terms of, you know, having to protect him and then teams eventually adjusting to what they know they're limiting Malik to offensively. But Joe loves Malik, and Malik showed up for him last week.
Well,
so I was thinking about
Robbie. Joe, and,
is Robbie the I was
Robbie was there. Robbie was there screaming in approval of Malik Willis and Matt LaFleur, who he now acknowledges as the biggest genius in the NFL.
Greatest coach of all time.
Hey, you know what? It's the best game I've ever seen Malik play. I'll say that. I was stunned.
I was too.
You know, some of the things that he was doing, you know, the opportunities to run at times, I thought he was very smart in the decisions that he made. And I just thought, okay, this is when he got inserted into that game at the end of the game after Jordan Love got hurt and he held that ball and he got sacked at the end. I was like, yup. I'm like, this is what this is going to be like if this guy's got to start. But that's not at all what he looked like. I just thought LaFleur did a really, really good job of making sure he schemed it to take away Malik standing there and having to make a lot of decisions. It was pretty much a one decision and go situation. Like, here's your read. If the read's not there, you know, you can run it. Just make sure you protect the ball. And then otherwise we're going to lean on, you know, the run game and other conservative aspects. And so LaFleur did a good job, but I know they want to get Love obviously onto that field as soon as possible, health permitting.
on the other side of scheming, Charles, Shane Waldron, people not necessarily impressed. I know you covered Texans Bears in your town there in Houston. Also, just a lot going on. Caleb Williams at times maybe not realizing you can't throw some passes he throws. And then after the game, got Stroud trying to give him a little advice, and he looked very annoyed by it. But what's your overall takeaway from that one?
Yeah, the post-game interaction with Stroud was interesting because when you watched it unfold, you're like, okay, that was more than just a like, hey, you know, good game, keep it up, you know, hang in there. But it was longer than that. And you could see Stroud was the one who kind of kept engaging it when Caleb looked like he just wanted to get out of there. And then afterward, Caleb got asked about it. And he just was like, he made it seem like it was just like a nothing exchange. Like it was just like, you know, he kind of really, really downplayed it. And then later when I heard kind of what the audio was, I'm like, wow, this is, I don't know if he was salty because he lost. You know, I think he was upset about that. He had a really bad game. He'd been beaten up, he got sacked 7 times. He's pressured the entire night, virtually every single snap. You know, the Bears looked awful. The offensive play calling by Shane Waldron in that game was really, really poor. I mean, there was no attempt to do anything balanced, completely veered away from the run game. Like it was a weird thing too, because the organization, they were really excited when Shane came in because they're like, we're going to get away from this penchant we had to throw the ball too much, lean too much into, you know, a play calling style that was constantly putting Justin Fields at, you know, in harm's way. And that's exactly what has happened so far with the Bears. I mean, their offensive line is just, the center is terrible. Like, I don't even know at this point, particularly after the Titans game, I was like, I don't even know how to start the guy again after you saw some of the snaps where he's just getting absolutely trucked every single play. But I think what was interesting to me is I'm watching the game and Caleb's just getting killed. They're not adjusting anything. He's forcing things at times. He's missing open players at other times. And I actually thought about Washington because I saw the Commanders and their offensive line's worse than the Bears, absolutely worse. And yet Jaden Daniels has had I don't want to say a completely different experience in terms of protection, but a much better experience. And when you look at how Cliff Kingsbury's called the game there, the first game, it was insane how much they focused on get the ball out of your hands immediately. You're throwing it behind the line of scrimmage. You're throwing it to the line of scrimmage. We're going to keep this as tight as possible, and we're just not going to give the other team any chances to get shots at you unless you take off running. And that's something that they're trying to work on getting them to protect themselves. Second game out, same thing. You know, you saw them open the passing game a little bit more, especially in the second half of Daniel's second game, but you can see how they schemed it to try and protect him just by not giving defenses the opportunity to get to a quarterback who's standing back there waiting for mid-level to long, intermediate to long routes to develop. They're not doing that. Terry McLaurin has been virtually, like, you can just write him off so far this season because they can't wait. They can't sit there and go, well, let's let Terry get deeper into the route tree, and then, you know, we'll take some long shots because they know that means Jaden Daniels is holding the ball. And that's not happening with Caleb. Shane has called the game as if he has adequate protection, and he does not. And he has not reached for the running game. And it's very frustrating, I think, especially for that fan base, because they're like, it's a lot of hallmarks of what happened to Justin Fields kind of has happened to Caleb the first 2 weeks of the season. And then now you have Roma Dunze's dad, and this like just happened. James Odunze, like in the last 24 hours, is like tweeting out clips of like Rome open.
Yeah. Like, oh, good. Like, oh, goody.
I'm like, here we go, football dads.
Yeah. Really good stuff there. So, Charles, back on the Titans front, you know, we talked with you last week about the disastrous pick six from Will Levis against Chicago. And this week, it wasn't quite the same, but a similar turnover that Will Levis had in this game. So your concern level with that from 1 week to the next, and another just horrendous decision from Will Levis. And by the way, the Titans have gotten a punt block 2 weeks in a row too. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I actually thought this week's turnover was worse. I really did, because it's the quintessential you know, you have to know what you absolutely cannot do. And it was every part of it was just a bad play. Continuing the play, not throwing the ball away, maybe when you had the opportunity, but then thinking, let me just throw this out here, and you're putting another player on the hook. I mean, look, the pick six was terrible. It was bad. But you can also chalk that up to it's a natural thing that quarterbacks run into, even good quarterbacks. You're not perceiving the coverage well enough. You're just putting the ball out there and you're thinking, I have an opportunity here, there's space, whatever. Either you're not seeing it, you're not reading it right. But it's a typical football play. It's a typical football mistake that gets made a lot, and you can clean that up. What happened this week, though, was it's a mindset and a mentality thing. Not knowing what is enough, not knowing the things I cannot do, and also taking a loss, taking a sack, knowing you're in the red zone, knowing you have an opportunity for a field goal, and you know, that's the kind of stuff where when quarterbacks do that repeatedly, you're like, this guy's not going to make it. Like, you can't be, because that's something that's really, really hard to remove from a quarterback's mentality. And when I saw Brian Callahan like go off and, you know, cameras catch it and you can see exactly what he said to Levis and the cursing and all that stuff, I was like, it's going to be interesting to see how, you know, Callahan addresses this later. And I really loved it. I loved that he came out and was like, this was dumb. And I was upset and, you know, talked about it happening in the red zone and giving up a field goal and all that. And I think that's what you got to do. You have to step up. And I don't mind that he did it publicly, but you have to step up early on with quarterbacks like this and say, you need to know you cannot do this, because that is the type of thing that loses games for us. And you're not going to be a starting quarterback if this continues. And I'm just telling you right now, if this happens 3 weeks in a row, if he does it again, I think at that point, then you're like, okay, do we have to sit you? Like, do we have to bench you? Because, you know, you can't arguably cost us two games in a row here. And if this happens a third time and you're not getting it, I think at that point you got to start thinking about, do we need to pull back on him a little bit to make him understand that he better have this in his head every time he goes out there. And just because he's in the grasp of somebody, don't start looking to do stupid things. It was, I can't even imagine how frustrated Titans fans were in that moment, but I was glad to see, you know, a new head coach step up and I think address it the way it should have been addressed.
Well, to be clear on that, and this, because this leads into my next question, when you say benching, you're talking about a teach him a lesson benching, not like, okay, Mason, you get the rest of the season.
Yeah, yeah, not permanently. A like, hey, you know, this is we're not screwing around here. Like, either,
right?
You know, we're coaching this out of you now, and there's going to be repercussions that are not just me screaming at you on the sideline. Like, if you do this again, you're going to get yanked out of the game, and maybe not for the entire game, but it's going to be a situation where we're going to take you off the field. And like, it's embarrassing. I hate repeatedly bringing this up, but when this was going on with Wentz, and again, it is very similar to things that you saw with Carson Wentz, where he was overcompensating with his skill and talent, thinking he could do anything, and he was destroying games. And the thing that the Eagles ran into that was so difficult, and then it happened again in Indianapolis, was Wentz was stubborn about it. He was hard-headed. Like, it was like he refused to learn to limit himself in situations where the exposure was potentially, you know, costing your team a game. And at some point, and the coaches said they were losing their minds. They're like, he just will not listen. Like, he will, it's not getting through to him. And it frustrated two staffs in a row. It frustrated the staff in Philly, frustrated the staff in Indianapolis. And at some point you're like, well, it's just in his DNA. He can't not, make a bad play. He always feels like he has to, try to hero ball this moment, and it's just disastrous. And you can't have a starting quarterback who does things like that. And I think it's something that they probably should have taken on much more aggressively early on in Philly. That's how ownership felt. I can tell you that with Doug Peterson, it became a conversation in the building from the owner. Are you going to coach him hard? Like, are you going to, you need to come down on him in these situations. He's got to learn and understand what he can or can't do. And I think they felt like Doug was not doing that. And that's part of why they got to a crossroads and Doug left.
Well, speaking of ownership and quarterbacks messing up and benchings and all that, I mean, the absolute bleep show in Carolina, Charles. First of all, it's just amazing to me. I understand how bad the kid's been. I think they've also destroyed him. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
Or at least they've made it really tough on him. First of all, do you believe that they are going to shop him? And second of all, I mean, where's David Tepper rank? I mean, I have to look at Canales's answer the other day as some tacit acknowledgement that Tepper is driving another bad decision in that franchise.
So here's the problem, and it could be a lie. I mean, I spoke to someone there, and I was told, no, they're not. And it was after Adam Schefter had brought up on his podcast, hey, maybe, you know, Miami, a potential trade to Miami or whatever, and which seemed really speculative. And I was told by someone there, that's not the plan. Like, this is not he's done, we're going to trade him kind of a situation. I don't know if that's true or not. And the problem is, the reason why I don't know it's true or not, it did not come from David Tepper. And that's the, no matter what you're told by Dave Canales or Dan Morgan or anyone else in that organization, you always know, and it's come from every person who has departed that organization, at the end of the day, any decision can be turned around on a dime by David Tepper. He can change his mind, and he has no qualms, or at least in the past, has had no qualms about stepping in and saying, nope, this is what we need to do. Like, you're doing this wrong, or I disagree with this. This is how this is going to change. And supposedly, and again, when I went through Carolina, I was told straight up, like, no, Dave's not doing that anymore. He gets it. He understands. He has to just let the coach, you know, the coaching staff and the front office do their own thing and make their own decisions. And even if he doesn't agree with it, he has to let them be at the controls. But I was told from inside the organization that this is more the way it was termed to me was, you know, he needs to heal, like letting him, you know, get a break and heal, like mentally, in terms of like his confidence, because he has just been destroyed basically from the, you know, first game on of his rookie season to this point, particularly by the offensive line that really throttled him. The line, I think, has played better this year, but it's more of he just never built a base of confidence in year one. There was the coaching staff change, and he's just had a ton of stuff thrown at him. But what scares you is, you know, I'm talking to personnel evaluators and like scouts and stuff, and it was even before he was benched, and I'm like, did everybody just miss on Bryce? Like, what's the deal here? And to a man, everyone kept saying no, no, no. Like, and it was like all different versions of the same answer, where it's like, no, it's a Carolina problem. They're the ones that destroyed him. They're the ones that gave him a horrible offensive line in year one. They're the ones that made the coaching staff change. There's organizational chaos around him, and it has mentally ruined him. And one scout in particular, and I wrote about this and I quoted him, he talked about I think it was like the hot read to Seelan, where it's like basically a wide handoff, where he's, you know, ball snapped. He turns to his left. He sees the pressure. He knows the pressure's coming. His hot read is literally like a 3-yard pass. And he missed Thielen by like 2-3 yards in front of Thielen. It was horrible, just a horrible play. And it was on all the clips and stuff. Everybody's seen the low light of it. And this scout said to me, he's like, he just talked about how insane that was and how like at Alabama, that is a play that Bryce Young made 999 out of 1,000, you know, throws. Like it's a throw he makes in his sleep. And now he can't even do that. And you know, he basically is like, you can see how mentally fried he is. And I think they do agree with that inside the organization. I do think they think he's got a confidence problem, and it's messing up, you know, like his footwork's not good, his body language. They were really, really concerned about his body language. And that I think factored in the benching as well. So yeah, it's rough. And I think back to Zach Wilson and with the Jets, you know, and just talking to the Jets organization after Wilson was on his way out there, and I'm just saying, we never should have started him as a rookie. It was such a huge mistake, and that destroyed his confidence in year one, and he never really recovered from that. And I wonder if that's kind of where Bryce Young is.
Charles, on the AFC South front, you brought up Houston. They get the win. They improved to 2-0. Everybody else, not going so hot for it. Titans are 0-2. Colts are 0-2. Jags are 0-2. Specifically with Jacksonville and Indy, your concern level with those two teams at this point, and in a little bit of a different situation. I mean, Anthony Richardson made what, his sixth, seventh start in the league the other day.
Right.
So they're
still
young there. Trevor Lawrence, not looking great so far. What's the concern level in Jacksonville?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crazy because I think they're having red zone problems again. Like, when you kind of watch what their efficiency looks like in the red zone, it's going back to Lawrence kind of always had some, other than, you know, look, he had that season, obviously, where he played sort of to the level that we expected. But, you know, the decisions, some of the throws that he makes, I don't think Doug has called a particularly great game so far. I think, you know, Lawrence has been undermined the first 2 weeks of the season. I think Doug Peterson has struggled a little bit in some of the play calling mistakes that he's made. Also clock mistakes. He's had clock management issues the first 2 weeks as well. But, you know, I think there's a couple of things that when you look at who Lawrence is working with, number one, Christian Kirk, I don't know what's going on there. Like, I'm not entirely certain how he's fallen off the map like this, but he's got a rookie receiver in Brian Thomas Jr. You know, Brenton Strange, the tight end that started, you know, this last week, is a second year player that I think is still developing. You changed out, you brought in Gabe Davis. So really the skill positions, I think, around Lawrence, that's another thing too, from a chemistry standpoint, he's struggling with not having Evan Engram on the field, which I think was kind of, you know, a little bit of his security blanket. And, you know, I do think there's some ripples of losing Calvin Ridley as well, not thinking you weren't going to lose him, and not really adequately responding to that loss. And I will say this too, and I think it's more than just in Jacksonville. I wonder if teams are waking up to, maybe we need to play guys in the preseason. Like, maybe we actually have to, like, we need to play quarterbacks in the preseason. We have to play our offensive line in the preseason to actually give these guys some snaps and give them, you know, an ability to build up at least a modest amount of chemistry, you know, going into the regular season. Because offensively, I mean, we're at like a 5 or 6 year low in terms of like touchdown passes. The first two, I wish I had the stat for me right now, but I think we're at an all-time low or a 5 or 6 year low in terms of like touchdowns through the first 2 weeks of the season, like passing touchdowns. And I think a lot of that has to do with chemistry and the fact that nobody is really getting any realistic chemistry opportunities for basically, you know, January until September. And that's what some of these teams are struggling with. It's a Bryce Young thing too, by the way. And when you talk to people in that organization, they're like, yeah, we probably should have played Bryce more than one series the entire preseason. You know, he needed more than that. And I think when you look at Jacksonville and the changes that they made offensively around Trevor with those skill position guys, I think there's some chemistry issues there too. But again, I will tell you, I do not think Doug has had his greatest two games coaching, that's for sure.
Well, I think they're, you know, I get that, and that trends that way until the next starting quarterback, you know, gets a knee blown up in a preseason game. But I think the bigger trend, or the trend that we should see, is teams figuring out that, like, instantly throwing your rookie quarterback out there could really be a problem. Right. I mean, I know it's just like what everybody does now, but maybe it's because, you know, most of my life that was just a total no-no in this league. But I feel like I feel like that's got to change some. Right.
I mean, I do. I think here's the interesting thing. I think in Minnesota, even though, you know, McCarthy was playing well prior to the meniscus tear, I still don't think they were going to start him. I still think they were going to sit on him for at least a little bit. They felt good about what Sam Darnold was doing, and I think they were really excited that JJ showed some stuff in the preseason. But I'm telling you, that organization, they were 100% geared toward starting the season with Darnold and kind of seeing how it played out before they potentially turn to McCarthy. You look at the Patriots, same thing with Drake May. I mean, they stuck to their guns, and they May had the momentum to start when the season kicked off, and they're like, nope, we're going to go with Jacoby. We're going to stick with the plan that we had really from the moment we drafted him. And, and then there's the Penix situation in Atlanta where, he's getting the long-term red shirt. Nix has struggled, obviously, in Denver, turnover issues. So he's kind of grinding through it right now. I don't know if you've seen any of his post-game pressers, particularly the last one.
I think.
I asked about the end zone pick where he just says, what happened there? I threw it to the other team.
Yeah, that was good.
He's just like, yeah. And so, Caleb, I think if you're going to start them, you have to game plan it in a way that protects them. And I'm going to keep going back to Washington. Like, I think through two games, 22 of Jaden Daniels' 50 to 60 odd attempts, 22 have been to the line of scrimmage or behind it. That's insane. Like, it's nuts. Like, but you see what they're doing. They're like, we're just not giving anybody an opportunity to tee off on him. And there's other plays where they call the offense to move the pocket to, take some pressure off the offensive line. I think they keep harping on it with him. Like, hey, when you run, like, you keep putting yourself in harm's way. And so far you've been okay, although there was a close call there at one point. But physically you have to also understand, don't take punishment, get out of bounds, get down. I'm with you. I personally believe, even if it's like a Mahomes thing, even if you have the Ferrari, park it in the garage as long as you can. And even if that means losing some games, at least, get into a season where you understand your personnel a little bit more. Your offensive line has an ability to build up some chemistry early in the season. Get your bearings as an organization before you figure out when you want to insert these guys. I hope the league is turning back to, being far more conservative with rookie quarterbacks. But I also live in a place in Houston where they were like, no, he's ready to go. And clearly they were right.
Yep.
From the second he touched the field in Houston, he looked like he was a, 10-year veteran at quarterback. Now that's an outlier, obviously. That really never happens. But, I'm going to keep harping on this preseason stuff, man. The fact that nobody plays in the preseason is a monumental problem. And, the Jets, right? Like, go and look at Rodgers' history of openers, like the last 3-4 years. He's atrocious in openers, just terrible. And go and look and see how much he ever played in any of those preseasons. Just doesn't see the field. And I'm telling you, I think that has something to do with how these guys start from a chemistry standpoint.
Charles, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to be with us, and we will talk to you next Thursday.
Appreciate it, guys. And by the way, the Matt Patricia thing.
Dude.
Like, of all the things he had going for him, Bill, I was in the same boat. When I saw that, I didn't hear it. I saw headlines about it first, and I'm like, no way. Like, come on. There's no way he said this. Man,
asinine.
Some people, he is a Matt Patricia stan. Like, I've never seen anybody in my life. I'm with Joe. That undermined a lot of all these things I liked about Belichick. I'm like, God, why would you throw it all away? Why do you keep throwing things away on this guy? Let it go. Man.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, our guest on Robbie and Rex Row. A lot to get to there from what Charles had to say on the Titans and Packers. We'll get to that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Row, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.